At this time, City Council has returned to the council chambers from the executive session where we discussed negotiations incident to proposed contractual arrangement with the Aiken Municipal Airport fixed base operator, and number two, for the purpose of receiving legal advice where the legal advice relates to a pending, threatened, or potential claim. This is related to the Jim Licks extension. The update to the agenda has, of course, been publicly posted. Do we have a motion and a second to come out of executive session?
So moved that we come out of the executive session.
Okay. I second.
Can we have a show of hands? Come out. Okay. It's unanimous. There was no, let me just say this, though, there was no voting that took place in the executive session at all. We talked about the issues that I just stated and same issues we had when we went in. Okay. Now, we'll officially call our city council to order. At this time, we're doing this on August 10th, 2015. We do have several guidelines I want to mention to everyone. You may speak on any item that you would like to speak with on the agenda, but council does ask that you hold your comments to 5 minutes or less. If you want to speak, please come to the podium and state your name and address. And please note that we do have a clock to help with the timing. There are times, of course, when there are reasons to go over 5 minutes, and there are a lot of them, like special presentations. We've got about four in just a few minutes. Or when council wants to talk, have a discussion with the speakers. So at this time, we will have an invocation and a pledge of allegiance to our flag.
May we pray. Heavenly Father, our Creator and our Sustainer, our light and our fortress, our strength and our wisdom, we thank you for allowing us to see another day and for all the blessings that you've bestowed upon us. Even though we may not have deserved them, because of your grace and your mercy, you gave them to us anyway. We ask for your guiding hand to lead us through difficult situations. May we approach our tasks with wisdom and approach our members with respect. May our conduct create an environment of cooperation and kindness. Grant us unity, hope, and vision. Stir your hope within our hearts, and for those who have none, we ask that you renew their faith. May your vision fill our lives and inspire growth in our communities. Guide our hearts as we make decisions. And bless all families that are represented here tonight, and allow safe travels as we depart. In your precious name I pray. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Council, are there any additions or deletions to the agenda necessary? Not seeing any hands or anything. We'll move on to the first item. Minutes, consideration of the minutes of the work session of July 9th, 2015, and the regular meeting of July 13th, 2015.
Mr. Mayor.
Do we have a motion and second?
Mr. Mayor.
Yeah.
The motion is made to approve the work session on July 9th and the regular meeting of July 13th.
Okay. Do we have a second?
I second.
Okay. Show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously. Under presentations, we have several this evening, and I'm going to come down, and we have three, and Gail Biggs is going to come down with me on the second one. I'll go ahead with the first and then the third. It's always nice to have these special proclamations. First proclamation is for Habitat for Humanity. Whereas in April 1988, Aiken County Habitat for Humanity became a 501c3 nonprofit organization and an affiliate of Habitat for Humanity International. An Christian housing ministry whose objective is to eliminate poverty housing from the world. And whereas Habitat provides home ownership opportunities in Aiken County to the very low-income families in need of affordable housing, and whereas Habitat has collaborated with the City of Aiken over the years to address low-income housing needs and the community development, and whereas Habitat has expanded its low-income housing operations to include existing homeowners needing minor repairs, renovations, and cleanup of their homes, and whereas in recognition of Habitat starting its 100th house, which is notable achievement and demonstration of its commitment and perseverance to its mission, whereas, in appreciation for the collaboration and partnership with Habitat over the years, now therefore I, Fred B. Cavanaugh, Mayor of the City of Aiken, South Carolina, and City Council, do hereby proclaim the month of September 2015 as Habitat for Humanity Month throughout the city, and encourage all residents to support Aiken County Habitat for Humanity, become involved in the 100 house Habitat House activities presented this August 10th, 2015. Congratulations.
Mr. Mayor, thank you.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, okay. First of all, I want to thank on behalf of our chairman of the board, Aaron Washington, and the net resale store manager, Henry Krippner, all of the volunteers and everything, but certainly the city. We would not be building our 100th house if it hadn't been for the city. It has played a major role in support of the activities that we do within the city confines, and we greatly appreciate that, and we want to thank you for it. This is a major achievement for us to do the 100th house. We're very excited about it. You're all invited to participate in it in one way or another. And we look forward to the time when we hand the keys over to our homeowners. So, again, thank you very, very much.
Thank Richard, if you don't mind, I'd like to just add comments about your dedication and commitment, and Henry as well. You all have been committed to providing housing for so many, many people over the years. And believe me, you've made the families stronger and improved the lives of so many people in this town. And we can't thank you enough for what you've done. But I'm also happy to see this young man, Dr. Washington, who's a scientist at the National Lab, who's leading your charge here. We thank you for your work as well.
Thank you very much. Good evening. This proclamation is for a very special group of people that did a very special thing. Whereas residents of Aiken County learned in February 2015 that the Memorial Day Parade for 2015 had been canceled and were shocked and disappointed. And whereas the Memorial Day Parade is an important way to memorialize our deceased veterans and honor our living veterans. And whereas the year 2015 is especially important since it's the 50th anniversary of the end of the Vietnam conflict, and it was felt that we should give honor to all of our veterans, but especially the Vietnam veterans this year. And whereas through the determined efforts of Aiken City Councilwoman Gail Diggs, Jean Quarterbaum of the Trenton Chapter of the Daughters of the American Revolution, Jack Morrison, chairman of the Aiken Augusta Wounded Warrior Golf Classic, Ed Knight, president of the Aiken County Veterans Council, Sandra Herrick, a Trenton Chapter Daughters of the American Revolution member, Leslie Horride, a retired Navy commander with public relations experience, and Wes Gerald and Betsy Davis of the Aiken JCs with experience in organizing a parade. A Memorial Day Parade Committee was formed to press forward with a Memorial Day Parade in Aiken. And whereas, with the leadership and determination of the group, on May 23rd, 2015, one of the best Memorial Day parades took place in downtown Aiken with over 130 entries. Now, therefore, the Council of the City of Aiken does hereby honor and commend the Memorial Day Parade Committee and point out that the seemingly impossible can be accomplished when the passion for the cause and the willingness to work hard are present. Council thanks the committee and the citizens who attended the parade in support of our veterans. Now I'd like this extraordinary group of people to join us. And that's Jeannie Quarterbaum, Jack Morrison, Sandra Herrick, Leslie Horride, Ed Knight, and I don't know whether Wes and Betsy. Oh, sure. Now, one thing you need to know is none of us knew each other. But we all came together for the same cause and made what most people thought was impossible possible. We actually organized this parade in less than 2.5 months. And it couldn't have happened, it wouldn't have happened without these extraordinary people that are standing here today. And I just thank God for them. Parade for 2016. We're looking for sponsors. Still no fees to participate, but we ask you to hurry up and sign up.
We'll go as far as 250 entries, maybe. Maybe not. No, we're not going to get anybody. The streets would know them. But they're pretty special people, and I just thank God for them.
Thank you, Gail.
Let's give Gail a hand. Yes.
This next proclamation is about David Stoneman and his family. And we'll ask you to come up. Let me try to get through it, and then you all could come up, please. Whereas David Stoner, a graduate of South Aiken High School, was selected as one of six members of the United States team to compete in the International Math Olympic Pad competition in Thailand, July 4th. To the 16th, 2015. And whereas the U.S. competition team accomplished something this country has not seen since 1994, for the first time in more than two decades, the six-member team representing the United States won first place at the 56th International Mathematical Olympiad. And whereas the top-ranked group of math students from high school around the country were head-to-head with competitors from more than 100 countries and was made up of 600 the finest mathematicians in the world. Whereas the United States team finished with a total score of 185, edging China with a score of 181. And five of the U.S. team members earned a gold award, including David Stoner, Aiken, South Carolina, who also placed in a tie for fifth best individual in the entire competition. And whereas this historic results reflects an enormous amount of work by students, families, and teachers and coaches for the cultivation of extraordinary mathematical talent. Now, therefore, I, Fred B. Kavanaugh, Mayor of the City of Aiken, South Carolina, and City Council, do hereby honor David Stoner and recognize and commend him for his great honor that he and his team members accomplished in winning this recognition, not only for themselves, but for the United States. Council thanks him for being such a positive role model and wish him well as he leaves for college to continue his life journey at Harvard and beyond. Signed by City Council members. Would the family please come up?
Through my mathematical journey, I've just really felt the support and encouragement of this community, and I appreciate it a lot. And so thank you all.
Thank you.
Next item is a presentation by Rick Toole on results of the soil boring test at Jim Lakes Extension Roads and cost estimates of options for repair. Mr. Glenn.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and through you to the members of the council. As you know, we had a thorough presentation last week by Mr. Toole, and during that workshop, we asked him to provide additional information in terms of cost estimates for the variety of options that were included in his initial report. He wasn't sure he was going to be able to do that for this evening, but I know that he worked night and day to make that happen, and we want to publicly thank him for that. I know that there are some folks here that weren't able to attend the workshop, so maybe a 1 or 2 minute just a summary in terms of what your report showed. And then if you could go through the various options, providing a little more detail about the pros and the cons of each, but also the costs as well, that'd be very helpful. Rick?
Mr. Mayor, Manager Clem, ladies and gentlemen, council, ladies and gentlemen, I appreciate the opportunity to come tonight and give you a little bit of overview of where we've been and what we found out to date. A subsurface investigation and evaluation of the pavement system was conducted by Wilmer Engineering out of Atlanta, Georgia, to evaluate the pavement and the failures of the pavement at Jim Lake Subdivision Extension, specifically Moultrie Drive and Huron Drive. This area has been subject of a lot of speculation and talk and consideration over time and a lot of patching. And we were trying to come up with some answers for what has transpired and the best way to move forward, and that was our objective, what is the best way to move forward. In general, the report states that due to heavy construction traffic early in the development of the subdivision was a contributing factor to the overall failure of the roadway system, and it was exacerbated through the failure and then the introduction of moisture to subgrade materials. In accomplishing that evaluation, Wilmer Engineering presented six options for addressing the pavement system and what might happen, and this was prepared in a report that was forwarded to Manager Clem earlier today. The executive summary basically provides a little bit of overview, but behind the executive summary is a table, and there's two sheets to that table, which basically outline the six options plus one additional option that was added as a combination of two other construction technologies. The first option was the do-nothing option, and that's basically what we have at the present time. That is, go in and repair as the road shows signs of failure, which is fairly regularly at this point. We estimated that at the end of 5 years, probably 30% of that roadway would be repaired, at the end of 10 years, another 30%, and at the end of 15 years, a final 30%. And looking at full-depth pavement repairs, which include removal and replacement of some of the subgrade material, replacement of the base, and repaving the patched areas, basically could run you in the order of $300,000+ at each of those five-year intervals, totaling over a 15-year life, approximately $1 million in repair costs. A second option was to mill some of the existing pavement off 2 inches and repair subgrades that had failed in that area and then come back and repave. We dismissed this option because of the variable depth of the pavements that are out there. The 2 inches would actually penetrate the pavement in some areas. In other areas, it would leave what we would consider a remnant that would not be fully viable to maintain it in place. The construction activities itself with pavement thicknesses less than 1 inch subjected to construction traffic and activities would tend to crack, and that crack, once you pave, would reflect up, so you would have the same issue as it came back again. The third option was to patch existing failures and then overlay with 2 inches of asphalt the entire system. I have several issues associated with this. One, we had to make an assumption over how much of the roadway would be required to be patched at the current time. We estimated approximately 40%, and that is an overestimation based on the actual failures that are out there as they exist today. But I believe by the time you get into the areas of the patch, allowing for some overlap of pavement, and I say that if you'll look at the detail sheet, the construction detail with full depth patch, you can see where the pavement extends beyond the actual patch area, the pavement that's replaced. In doing so, it does not address the overall subgrade and the concerns expressed by council and others and by some of the investigation results of the potential for high moisture content in the subgrade. So it would be a limited option. The total cost of that option basically is $570,000 in round figures. That figure could easily increase significantly depending on the number of patches, because saw cuts roughly average about $2 a foot. And any time you're taking out, say 100 square feet of patch, you've got a fairly decent amount associated with the saw cuts on it. The 4th, 5th, 6th, and 6A recommendations were basically the ones considered in this report and in the conclusions. The fourth one is the full depth reclamation. This is a process that South Carolina DOT, as well as other southern DOTs, use extensively in the rehabilitation of pavements. Basically, it takes equipment and you mill or grind the pavement, and with that you grind up or mix the material beneath the pavement, we call the base. You add cement. Now, that is determined through laboratory testing how much cement is added, and it creates a soil cement structure that is a very rigid structure. It's a very good structure. It's used on interstates as well as on secondary roads, primary and secondary. And then once that's placed and cured, not long, but cured, then you come in with 2 inches of overlay of asphalt for the riding surface. That does present a very viable option. It does provide a comfortable and aesthetically pleasing roadway surface. It does not address the overall and overarching consideration of what happens if you do have wet subgrades that may in the future contribute to premature failure. That is a possibility. The pavement itself should bridge minor areas on an FDR-type process and would present a very good and viable option. It's a low to moderate risk in that one, and the moderate comes from the identification of subgrades that may have a higher moisture content. However, at a cost of $300,000, it may be worthy of consideration. If you do have limited failure areas over a 5 or 10 year period, would be to come back and patch those areas. So that is the reason we consider that as a potential option. The fifth option is to remove the existing pavement and then perform a similar soil cement base construction methodology. In that particular option, you would come in and either mill or cut and remove with a front end loader the existing pavement in its entirety. As that's done, then once the existing base material is exposed, you come in and proof roll that, similar to the proof roll we did when we originally looked at the pavement system for initial evaluation. In that proof rolling process, you're able, as it's exposed, to identify areas that may be weak, they have higher moisture contents, or failures of subgrade materials, composite materials. Consequently, that particular option offers a higher level of risk, or higher level of confidence, a lower risk level associated with it than it does with the full depth asphalt reclamation process. You can extend the depth of the soil cement base in areas that may appear to be a little wetter, or areas that appear to move under the proof rolling, or you can go in and repair those areas prior to construction of your cement base course. This offers, I feel like, a very good pavement option or rehabilitation option with a low level of risk for approximately $330,000, which is substantially less than the next option, option six. Option six is your traditional repair method, and that's go in and remove the asphalt, remove the base, evaluate the subgrade, either improve or replace the subgrade materials, put in a new base and a new asphalt. It is a traditional method for, it's been around for 50 years to repair asphalt. That would have the very lowest risk as you proceeded. It also has the highest price tag at $1.7 million. $1,007,000. So it's a $1 million fix. It does require a lengthy process and will require the roads to be disrupted for a period of time a good bit more than the others. 6A was added, and 6A is a spinoff of option 6. And instead of removing the subgrade material, you expose the subgrade material and then utilize the same process we would have utilized in option 4 or 5 with the soil cement base. You come in with a laboratory mix design of soil cement, you apply that to the existing subgrade, then you replace the base and paving. And your savings of is $900,000 plus change. It's $100,000 less because we're not removing and hauling off subgrade material. We're actually improving that material in place. If you chose or elected to look at that option, that would be the strongest pavement section by far, because all of your subgrades or your structural numbers that make up your pavement system improve significantly with that soil cement subgrade. That road would be of a higher structural number than most of the roads in the city of Aiken.
Mm-hmm. What's the cost?
That's $900,000.
That's 6A is the last one.
I know I've covered them quickly, and there must be questions, Mr. Mayor, so I'd be happy to try to answer any questions.
I guess, Mr. Toole, just as a, I'll use it as a comment rather than a question.
Yes, sir.
All of your testing and what we've heard from the past 7 years on it, if you don't work on the subgrade and get rid of the water, or potential for water, and I don't know that we're solving the long-term problem, because typically what we've been told by the SCDOT as well as the city staff in the past, one of these roads should run 20 to 25 years with minimal patching. It can be up as much as 10% and still be minimal. And I guess from my standpoint, without working on the subgrade, we would still have a moderate cost within the next 5 to 10 years. That'd be my comment on it.
Rick, you mentioned this the other day and when we had a meeting, and also you mentioned it. I keep coming back to the idea that there was water on the roads and the asphalt 7 years before any houses were built. Now, to me, we keep thinking about, okay, what is really causing this problem? We've been saying that for years now, unfortunately. But if it was there when the roads were first put down, at least that section, I don't know where the water was coming from, or it's coming down from the higher levels. And we all know that some of that dirt was graded off, too. That didn't help anything. How do you feel about that? Could that possibly be the problem with all the road? I know that they, of course, they go up from there, from the lower level.
Yes, sir. But, we did request for edge drains to be installed in front of lots 4, 5, 6, and I think it's 7, which takes into consideration that lower area where water from the steeper cuts in the rear of those lots, and in order to try to intercept any water that may be traveling, either groundwater that's penetrated the surface in the slope, or surface water in that area, it's the lowest area, tie that into the storm drain system, I believe, to help intercept water along those areas. As far as the overall water, the borings, all of the data indicated that water was at a greater than 6 foot depth as far as permanent groundwater levels are concerned. Now, if there's moisture in the material, we found varying moisture contents in the existing material during the subsurface exploration, ranging anywhere from slightly below optimum moisture content to roughly 5% above optimum moisture content. Could that contribute? Yes. Would it contribute to future failures? If left untouched, yes, it could. There's no doubt about it. That's the reason that we assigned a level of risk to each of the options based on what conditions remained in place and what conditions are identified. Options 6 and 6A, where you actually remove to subgrade, and you evaluate that subgrade, then you can improve it in place and take care of the moisture content of the near surface material. If you can establish 3.5 to 4 feet of good material in any condition as a foundational material, you can stabilize it, you can build a roadway which will last. In this case, we're looking at 24 to 28 inches of total road grade, a road pavement system evaluation in that process. Proof rolling allows you to look a little deeper. If you understand proof rolling, you know what you're looking at, you can tell if it's a deep-seated problem or a near-surface problem. I believe that the moisture itself can be identified with the subgrades exposed and handled appropriately.
Just a further extension of that, and I don't know if the mayor's an engineer or not. What's a spray field? Is the spray field that was out there, can you mitigate the spray field? Is there anything that you do here that eliminates the adverse effects that a spray field would cause?
The spray field in and of itself is a mechanism for disposing sanitary sewer treatment as a sanitary sewer treatment methodology for disposing wastewater. I'm not sure exactly where the spray field was located. Our results are based on the soil test borings that we did, 22 borings along those roads, which is a significant number. We did not find any indication that prior land usage has contributed to that. The materials that were uncovered in the soil borings and in the Kessler dynamic cone penetrometer test indicated materials of a nature that are suitable for roadway construction. The condition of those materials when they were put down, or the condition of the materials right after paving, we don't know what that was. We have evidence from previous soils reports and letters from the city that were submitted to the city that indicate there were some wet areas in the subgrade, and that could have been that went towards premature failure of the pavement system. However, the spray field in and of itself should not have contributed to any of the changes in the soil conditions at this point.
Thank you.
You made reference to the a knowledgeable person watching the proof roll being able to tell the level of moisture, but then you went further to say, as you also made reference to one of the larger subgrade replacements, you came back and said that, that you felt like you could get to the point where the subgrade could be made safe and stable. Are you referring to through the process of proof roll and then doing repairs as flaws became obvious, or are we referring to the entire replacement of the subgrade and reworking the subgrade as outlined in item 6 and 6A?
Well, as a former geotechnical engineer, I would probably recommend that you have a continuous monitoring of the pavement system.
But did you say, were you saying that you felt like the proof rolling could give you enough level of proof rolling and then repairs as needed, as determined by proof roll, that you were you saying that you felt like that could get you the level of
confidence?
Confidence, yeah.
Yes, sir, I do.
Okay.
Any other comments?
Where do we go from here?
Okay.
Where do we go from here?
Well, that's for council. I mean, we got to do something with what we have now. We've got this report. We've had the reports before. Mm-hmm. We have some numbers here. What are we going to do for the first meeting in September? How do we determine?
I think we decide that at the first meeting in September.
Aye.
I said, I think we decide that between now and the first meeting, or at the first meeting in September. I mean, we don't, it's not an item to be voted on tonight, but
you got to vote on it, but what are we going to put on the agenda? Are we going to put the repair on, or what, how are we going to phrase it? I'll put it that way on the next agenda that we move forward with this. We've got his report. We've got six options there. And obviously my option is you got to fix the sub base. If the sub base was good now, we'd probably be okay. So you're at option 6 or 6A.
I got another quick question I just thought of for Mr. Tool. Mr. Tool, I have some rather unique experience in the area, not in the area that I can work, but in the regional area. And it seems to me that it glares at me that so much of these roads failed or
cracked, or whatever you want to call it, in areas that are both high points and low points, in areas that where you can see visible signs of water, and then also in areas where you can't. And one of the things from my own experience that came to mind was the quality of the asphalt that was put down in the first place. I certainly think all these other factors could have been part of it. I mean, you guys are experts and good at that. But could some of this problem have been the result of an inferior mix of asphalt in the very beginning? I mean, is that impossible to say?
At this point in time, it would be impossible to say. It's hard to distinguish between what was original asphalt and what was replaced. So many repairs, overlays, and changes have been made. However, the asphalt that was taken up in the cores did not demonstrate any signs of irregularities.
Does it make sense that high points and low points and all points in between would all be affected if it's really a moisture or subgrade problem? Wouldn't the moisture level be lower at or further from the asphalt at high-grade areas versus low-grade areas?
Councilman Mayor, one thing we did determine when we were looking at the soil test borings is there was a tremendous amount of fill placed, maybe not in depth, but a lot throughout the roadway sections at different areas. And whether that was from clearing, grubbing, grading, or whatever, there was fill located at site. When you begin moving fill in mass quantities, whatever the
mixes it all
it mixes
up.
It all up.
Okay.
So it would be very difficult to say that, you know, it was attributable to one area. However, we do believe that it was the heavy truck loading from construction equipment that actually initiated the failure. And once a failure began initiation, then it allowed more moisture in through the cracks in the road, and the failure just rapidly deteriorated. It was almost no way to catch up.
That helps.
Rick, John has some comments.
Just in terms of responding to Councilor Ebner's inquiry, might we suggest, since we made a commitment to make a decision in September, hopefully the first meeting in September, I think we could do this one of two ways. I mean, staff could recommend one option and bring it forward, but if we didn't pick the right option, then that's just going to postpone the inevitable. Might we suggest, I mean, I heard very clearly, I think, from our expert, that the first three aren't real serious options, so there'll be a 4, 5, and 6 in 6A. We could put those four on the agenda with a staff recommendation for one, and you would either agree with staff or alternatively pick another option, but we would come out of that meeting with a decision.
And the decision would have a dollar sign after it.
That's correct.
Well, all these estimates are a little bit low because they don't take into account, as your disclaimer in the report said, they don't take into account certain things. So I don't know if whichever one we might select, I don't think you set that as the dollar amount because you know already that it's going to be higher than whatever it says here.
Well, I've read them, and in my opinion, you're probably looking at the 25 to 35% range for options, because as Mr. Toole had said at the very end of his presentation before, the profile across the road has good material, but it wasn't properly placed, so to speak. And I think that's where we're going to get into it, is as you start to dig it up, you're going to find unknowns.
Yeah, all I'm addressing is if and when we decide on one, you said with a dollar figure. I don't know if we want to set an absolute dollar figure because you know already that these dollar figures are too low. It may be we have to give it a range or something.
I think we need to, his numbers there, the overhead and other things that you'll have, but we also need to put a number in there for unexpected items.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I mean, this report tells
I just didn't want to limit it to that number that's on this paper today.
Yes, his number was 10 to 15%, and by the time we get through with it at the next meeting, it ought to be 25 to 35% minimum above whatever we decide.
I think it's probably 25%. I think you're probably right.
Well, obviously, we need to put it out to bid as well.
Could we take some input from the residents that are here?
I go back to my statement earlier. We talked a great deal. We're at the point right now. We want it on the agenda. We will decide
at our next meeting which option we're going to accept and bid this out. That's just as plain as it can be. Do nothing is not an option for us, so we will decide something in terms of what we will do. I don't know what to do beyond that. We can talk about this another hour if you want to, but it's going to come to us deciding one of these, and the first three does not look like viable options. And I see Mr. Rich has a comment to make, Mr. Mayor.
Rick, you stated tonight that the cause of failure was construction traffic.
Speak into the mic.
That the cause of the failures was construction traffic. We also established last week that it could have been compaction, that it could have been water, that it could have been traffic. And I brought up to you and everybody here several times that these roads were failing 9 days after they were paved before any traffic was on there. Now, I don't understand how we can assume that traffic is the primary. I agree with you that traffic certainly wouldn't have helped it. But, you know, so I'm not sure that how we can eliminate the base as being part of the problem. Option four doesn't address the base. Option four leaves the base intact. Am I correct on that?
No, sir. It uses the base in the process.
So, let me...
It blends it with cement.
But it doesn't address the subgrade, does it?
No, sir.
Right. Sorry. Base subgrade. Novice engineer. And that concerns me because of what Mr. Klim said last week, which was, if we don't get this right, if we don't address the cause, the root cause of this, being if it is the subgrade, and we don't address it, as Mr. Klim said, we're going to be back here in 5 years with the same problems, road breaking up, and we're all going to look like a bunch of fools. So, and I think that's right, too. Option five would not cover an unknown subgrade either, correct?
You could identify subgrade issues in number five.
Okay. So there's that. You said that you need storm drains in some areas, but not all areas. We've been repeatedly told as citizens that we've maybe been overwatering our lawns. We've been hearing this for 3 years now about how overwatering the lawns could be causing the roads to fail. We've all heard that. It's in the minutes. It's been repeatedly. And you spoke last week of the fact that if lawns are watered and there isn't adequate, that the water can come down behind the curbing and get underneath the base and destroy the roads. So why would you only limit it to certain areas?
Areas that have already demonstrated that they have the potential for intercepting groundwater from above the lawn.
But how do we know that the other areas aren't as well? I mean, the other areas are destroyed, too.
Based on actual field observations. I mean, it can be extended based on field observations at the time.
I'm just saying, you know, if there's water coming out of one area underneath the base, all the mulch we drive from basically from the bottom to the, well, all the way from the end to the one end to the other is being destroyed, but we don't know what the causes of it are. So I would think it'd be good to try and address all of those. And as far as spray fields, I don't have a lot of information on spray fields, but I did do some research on spray fields, and spray fields in several publications were listed as a cause of soil change. Somehow it changes the soil composition when you spray for years and years and years and years. I don't know the dynamics of it, but it is listed as a cause of change in soil composition, as you were asking about. So I agree with Reggie. I think, you know, my concern is, as John Clem's concern is, as Reggie's concern is, and a number of the residents' concern is that we get to the bottom of this, that we can take one option or another, but if we don't get that sub-base straightened out, we could find ourselves in difficulty 5 years down the road, and I don't want to go through this 5 years.
I'm too old to go through this 5 years from now.
I don't either.
Rich, let me just say, the intention is not to waste the taxpayers' money. Whatever we decide, it will be a solution not to throw money down the tube.
Well, yeah, but you have to know
the cause.
The cause.
Right.
If you don't address the cause, then you are wasting
right.
money. And this is difficult because I've never heard anybody definitively say that we can put our finger exactly in a cause. You've identified right. traffic, but there was no traffic when the road was already failing. So that's sort of difficult. We've identified water beneath the road, but there was no traffic when that was occurring either in many areas. The pictures that I supplied last week were satellite photos. Unfortunately, I can't get the full extent of the road because of the shadows and the angle of the satellite photography, but clearly that road was failing. And 9 days after it was paved, there were already repairs being made on that road. 9 days. City records show that clearly. So how can we say that it was construction traffic in 9 days causing all this damage? I don't think you can.
Well, based on what's said, Mr. Mayor, are we saying that we want to do more studies and wait longer?
No, we've said that we're going to shoot.
No, I'm not saying we do more studies. I'm saying be very cautious in the options chosen and ensure that we're getting to the base cause of this problem. And if option 4 and option 5 do not address the subbase,
I don't think that that's going to be, this is just me speaking, that's going to be in the equation.
That's my concern, is that we don't.
Cheap is not always best.
Yes. Penny saving is not right. necessarily
best. Rick, let me ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
Both of you, for that matter, but is it possible that water could be the problem?
Well, water is always a culprit when you're dealing with subgrade issues for basin paving. Mr. Mayor, in this particular case, could high moisture content of the basin or subgrade contributed to the initial failure? Absolutely. There's no way to tell at this point.
I mean, I keep coming back to that myself, the water. The way you look, you find the water.
I will say that some Google Earth images during construction of lots 1248 and 1250, I'll show them to you. You can pass them around. This is construction during the, I found these today. It shows that you can see where the construction traffic entered and left the subdivision. I think this was done in, this particular Google was 2012,
sure.
which was several years after initial failures, but it shows what happens when construction traffic hit the roadway. The failures occurred right in the entrance and exits of the what we call an entrance and access exit for the construction traffic.
I was simply going to ask if it were indeed subgrade moisture issues, which is what I speculated all along, but your recent tests don't show above a depth of 8 feet, don't show that problem. But if it were indeed subgrade problems, would the city's prescribed protocol for testing and proof rolling and so forth, impact testing and all that, would that have turned that up? Would that have been obvious at that point, or could it have been that moisture problem still could have existed? Are testing procedures and protocol even adequate?
Testing procedures and protocols are adequate. Proof rolling at a subgrade and or base level should have indicated materials that were wet and moving. What you're looking for is materials that are moving, what we call pumping. If it's moving vertically, it's not stable.
Pump out, right. So we would have, if there had been a subgrade problem, we would have seen it during proof roll.
Should have.
Okay. But we don't even know if we did proof roll. But
that's right.
Okay. Okay, anything else? Comments?
Yes, sir, I got that.
I got a question. Okay.
Number 22.
Come up, please, and give us your name and address, if you would.
I'm Steve Kisner, Summit Drive, Aiken. I wasn't going to say anything, but I just couldn't sit still. First of all, enough's been said over the last 8 years about these roads, so I promise I'll be brief. But one thing that was said tonight that's absolutely not true is the roads were failing 9 days after they were paved. That is just not true. In 2007, we built these roads according to city specifications. The guidelines were presented to us. I'm a developer, by the way. Todd Gall and I were the developers. For some reason, I keep getting the impression that that's not important, but to me it is. The inspections, the incremental inspections required during this construction were performed by city engineering department. The testing was provided to the city for the sub-base and every incremental part of the construction by CSR testing, same company that Wilmer Engineering used to do the borings for this test that we just got from Wilmer. It has been determined by this report that we got that workmanship and materials that were used during the construction was not the cause of the failures. On two occasions, we received punch lists from the city, we being Gall and Kisner, that if you'll perform these punch lists during this period, then we will consider approval of the roads. Those punch lists were done. In both cases, on the punch lists, it was said, do patches. Come back and patch the failed areas, which we did. We also got input from the city engineering department as well as our engineers on how to perform those patches. So in our mind, the patches were going to be acceptable. The patches that we have out there today are not failing. There's no question about that. The main thing I want to point out to you is of the six options that we were given to rectify the situation, all of them but number one changes the original guidelines, the original specifications we were given to build these roads. In other words, they're upgrades.
Am I correct in saying that? 4, 5, and 6.
Yes, he said 4, 5, and 6 are upgrades over the original design criteria that we were given to repair, to build the roads. The thing that I keep hearing, and the thing that it's just like we ignore, is that Wilmer Engineering is saying construction traffic is the primary culprit of the failure of these roads. And we said that, Todd and I said that from the beginning, that the builder that came in to build these houses moved tons and tons of dirt, came off these lots in the same position every time, made his turn with his dump trucks, and that's where the failures started occurring. Once we started getting these failures, then we couldn't control the way the water was getting to the subbase. And it just seems like we're not hearing or listening to that point that Rick just made. That's all I have. Any questions?
Thank you. I appreciate your comments.
Okay.
Thank you.
I think this, the city specifications do address the base and the sub-base, both conditions. And the only thing you could say one way or the other is the depth of each one of them, but those are specifically addressed in the city specifications.
Mr. Riches.
In fact, you reported that you were 66% completed on paving. I don't remember the exact dates, and I don't have them here. 9 days following that, there was a city report that stated that there were pavement failures occurring in the pavement. As far as the truck traffic, I sympathize with that problem, and I agree with you that that could possibly be a cause of the failures. However, it was your road, and you had control over that road. Nobody else, but you had control over that road. You could choose to tell the contractor not to do that. It was your road. You have a perfect right to tell people not to destroy your road. No, that's all I have to say.
I think we need to move on.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Okay. Our goal is still next meeting.
I want to echo something that was said earlier by Mr. Duard, but anything that might be required as far as additional conversation, I'm open to any other additional dialogues or conversations or meetings that we might need between now and that September meeting.
Okay, under old business, first item, approval of appointments and discussion of appointees to various city boards, commissions, and committees.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Council has 15 pending appointments to fill vacancies on different boards, committees, and commissions. Four appointments are presented for Council's consideration and vote at the meeting tonight. Mayor Kavanaugh has recommended the appointment of Jordan Getzman to the Community Development Committee. If appointed, his term would expire September 2, 2016. Councilman Dwyer has recommended the reappointment of Lori Comshaw to the Recreation Commission. If reappointed, her term would expire the 1st of September in 2017. Councilwoman Diggs has recommended the appointment of Gary Yount to the Community Development Committee. If appointed, his term would expire September 2, 2017. And Councilman Murray has recommended the reappointment of Butch Robertson to the General Aviation Commission. If reappointed, his term would expire September 1, 2017. Also, a memo from Lucy Knowles, our Equine Committee Chair, is attached. She is requesting that the Council consider filling the vacancy of the Equine Committee due to the death of Alan Corley. She is also requesting the Council consider appointing additional members to the committee to represent other equine interests. For council consideration is the reappointment of Lori Comshaw to the Recreation Commission, Butch Robertson to the General Aviation Commission, and the appointment of Jordan Getzman and Gary Yount to the Community Development Committee. We are also asking council's desire regarding the Equine Committee request to fill a vacancy and to appoint additional members to the committee.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion second for approval?
I so move.
Second.
Okay, show of hands, please.
I have a comment.
I'm sorry?
I have a comment. I'd like to pursue the appointment of people to the Equine Committee. My question is, who's going to drive that? We need to identify people in the different constituencies, clearly, especially given we've got the Aiken Horse Park opening up. That's going to utilize more disciplines. I don't know the best way to approach it. Beyond maybe somehow conversing with people in the equine industry to solicit volunteers.
I think that's a great way to do it.
Well, there's eight members now, right?
It's an ad hoc committee in the sense that it meets only when they need to meet.
Right, right.
But there's no limit to the number of members that can be on it.
Okay.
Because we don't appoint them.
Well, then,
I don't think we do, do we?
If we don't appoint them, surely we do, or I wouldn't have been on here.
I think they were
recommended to us initially, and we agreed with the Equine Committee.
I just want to suggest that we...
Can you help us, Stuart, on that?
Yeah, I'm the liaison with the Equine Committee, and I know that you're correct that this committee was set up in the early 2000s, and with Mr. Corey's passing, this is the first real opening. It's had a stable membership, but they do that is something they wanted guidance on. They could certainly recommend some names should council desire, or if council would like to pursue this as they do other committee membership, fulfilling those vacancies on other boards similar to other boards and commissions.
But they
just wanted some guidance.
But in order to get on there, they must be appointed by council.
Ultimately, yes.
The question just gets to be, it's already got eight members to, you know, who then appoints? I mean, I think they should recommend somebody and we pass them, but it could get to be an issue as to who, if there's more than one or
maybe
two or three.
Maybe they have someone in mind.
Why don't we let the committee give us maybe one or two or three even recommendations?
I will get with the chair and pursue that over the next month or two. Thank you.
Whether it's one, two, or three appointments. Okay. How about nominations for the next?
We never voted on that motion. Remember, he's more discussion.
Okay.
Now already.
Show of hands, please. All in favor. Okay. Passes unanimously. Okay. Any nominations for the next meeting? If not, we'll move on. Under new business, approval of a resolution authorizing the provision of water service to property at 1508 Hampton Avenue Northwest. Mr. Clem, please.
Mr. Mayor, the city has received a request for water service to be provided for a future Dollar General store at 1508 Hampton Avenue Northwest. This parcel is currently being used as a yard for construction materials and equipment. The city utility policy requires that a request for city water and or sanitary sewer for development of a site in an unincorporated area be reviewed by the Planning Commission and approved by the City Council. City water is available to the site, but sanitary sewer is not currently available to the site. At the July 14, 2015 meeting of the Planning Commission, they reviewed the request and recommended approval of water service to 1508 Hampton Ave Northwest with the following conditions as noted in our agenda package. For City Council consideration is approval of water service to 1508 Hampton Avenue Northwest with the conditions recommended by the Planning Commission.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
I second.
Is there any discussion?
Yes. Okay. Item number 8 and 9, which have to do with the brick on three sides and the yellow, orange, and bright colors. I assume that when this was looked at, it treats all of the buildings equal, Waffle House, Dollar General, all of those.
We use those conditions anytime you have somebody like that coming before council.
Tommy's coming up.
Assume that we haven't treated this one any different than any of the others in the city limits.
I specifically remember the Waffle House on Pine Log Road being developed and those conditions being in there.
And we have one out on Richland Avenue and so forth, so they're all treated equal?
Well, the ones on Richland Avenue that's inside the city that's zoned general business, we don't have a bite at the apple, so to speak, there as far as design overlay. But basically, the conditions outlined in this memo and that the Planning Commission approved is the same as the conditions that were put on the Dollar General at 19 and Croft Mill Road. Mm-hmm. The only difference is this one requires the brick on three sides rather than four sides. And if you're familiar with that site, the road actually comes into the back of the building, so all four sides are visible. The other thing on these design guidelines or these design criteria is it's really what the developer submitted. It's what's in your agenda packet, and it's holding into what you're looking at in your agenda packet.
My concern was the colors, because all of these stores have trademark colors, and it comes up regularly about signs and everything else, but they're still able to use their trademark colors, I would assume.
Absolutely.
Okay, yes. Very good. Thank you.
Okay, anything else? If not, show of hands, please. I'm in favor. Pass this unanimously. Item 2 is first reading with an ordinance to rezone a 16th of an acre at 616 Whippoorwill Court from RS6 to RS15, single-family residential.
Mr. Mayor, Rebecca M. Green of 616 Whippoorwill Court is requesting the rezoning of 0.16 of an acre from RS6, single-family residential, to RS15, single-family residential. The property was gifted to Ms. Green by Mike Calhoun, who recently requested some adjacent property to be rezoned to office. This parcel will serve as a buffer between the office zoning and the residential use. The property gifted to Ms. Green was zoned RS6 and is to be combined with her current lot, which is zoned RS15. To comply with the zoning ordinance, both parcels are required to have the same zoning district in order to be combined. At the July 14, 2015 meeting, the Planning Commission considered the request for rezoning the gifted property from R6 to RS15. After discussion, the Commission recommended to the Council that the 0.16 acre be rezoned from RS6 to RS15. The Council consideration is first reading of an ordinance to rezone 0.16 of an acre at 616 Whippoorwill Court from RS6 to RS15, single family residential. Upon council approval, second reading and public hearing of the ordinance will be held at the next regular meeting of the council.
Okay. Okay, thank you, Senator. Do we have a motion and a second for approval?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second.
Second, okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Unanimously. Item 3 is a request for authorization to apply for FAA grant for the Aiken Municipal Airport Terminal Apron Expansion. Mr. Clayton.
Mr. Mayor, as we previously reported to the Council, the Aiken Municipal Airport can potentially be the recipient of an FAA grant for expansion of the terminal apron. This expansion would grow the capacity of the airport to handle larger airplanes. The grant has estimated funding of up to $2.9 million. The FAA will pay 90% of the cost, with the South Carolina Aeronautics Commission and the City of Aiken each paying 5%. The city's share will not exceed $149,388. The next step in the process is to request Council's authorization to apply for the grant. Should Council approve this, the attached application would be forwarded to the FAA for review. We should hear from the FAA within 45 to 60 days if we are formally awarded the grant. The Council consideration is a request to authorize an application to the FAA for a grant to expand the terminal apron at the Aiken Municipal Airport. And Mr. George Gritton is here. He was instrumental in putting the grant together with Stuart Biedenbow, our city airport manager. I don't know whether you would like him to present something or just answer questions or how you would like to proceed.
Well, come up and do either or both. If you have something else you want to tell us other than what's been said.
There's really nothing to add from what we talked about at the work session. We have the three portions of what was bid and what we are discussing. This basically is an application for the grant, and then when we would come back, we would know that they gave us the full amount, the partial amount, and of course we'll report back to Council when we have the actual grant recommendation in hand.
Okay. On page 147 in our packet, you've got the cost broken down. You have like $95,000 for architectural engineering fees, another $20,000 for that, and project inspection fees. Who gets that money? Does that?
Those go to Baker, the engineering company that does the actual design and that type of thing. We'll be using them to, any final project management, that sort of thing, will be, who we contract with.
Do they get the entire amount of the grant?
No, they do not get the entire grant. They will help us manage it. They will provide construction management, that sort of thing.
But do we go out to bid then for companies to?
We have gone out to bid, and this grant is based on those actual numbers.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Will the funding for this be from the hospitality tax?
That would be determined, I guess, at this point. I know Council had a discussion with the budget that was passed to revisit the funding source, the 5% match, and again, that's something we can be working on over the next one or two meetings while we're waiting to find out if we get the grant awarded. We've got several options we've been discussing, but we didn't want to bring this to Council before we got approval to apply for the grant.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you both. Do we have a motion and a second for approval?
Permission, Mr. Mayor, for staff to apply for the grant?
Second.
Second. Okay. Show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 4, first reading of an ordinance to enter into a lease renewal agreement with the Aiken Aviation as a fixed base operator at Aiken Municipal Airport. Mr. Payne, please.
Mr. Mayor, when we originally discussed this matter, it was our belief that there was an absolute nexus between what decision was being made about the potential rebuilding of the hangars and our ability to apply for the FAA grant. Through yeoman's work by Stuart Biedenbaugh, our airport manager, we came to understand that that wasn't in fact the case. While there are implications, we have to obviously remove at some point the existing hangars. How we ultimately deal with that matter needs to continuously be or discussed once again. The recommendation that I'm making to this council tonight is that we postpone or defer or table this action, which by no means precludes us at any future date. To the extent the fixed base operator continues to be interested in an extension to come back before the council. I was concerned that this appeared to be rushed because of our initial belief that we had to have this decided before we applied for the grant, and that isn't the case. I want to thank publicly our fixed base operator for working so closely with us and his willingness to offer several options in consideration in terms of potential financing for the hangar, hangar one or possibly two at some point in the future. But I'm not believing that there is any urgency for the council to act tonight on this, and I know that at least several councilors have some additional questions that they would like us to research and get back to you. So my recommendation is at this point that we table or postpone the action on this item.
Okay, sir.
I move we continue the item.
Continue. Do we have a motion and a second to continue this item?
I second.
Okay. All right. Is that a second?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Who was first?
I moved.
Okay, I'm sorry. I missed that. All right. Okay, any discussion? If not, show of hands, please, all in favor. On the petitions, request to renew a memorandum of understanding with Joy and Aiken, formerly known as Juilliard and Aiken. Mr. Clement.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, we have received a request apparently for some time. This was an item that we were to get to because the past memorandum has run its course. There have been some inquiry in terms of what the value of the in-kind services that are provided to this entity. Not so much as an issue with this entity, but I know that for at least several council members, they've made it very clear that they want to head towards a greater understanding of what things cost, services that are provided. And so I absolutely want to make sure that all of you have that information, and so I would suggest that for no other reason that we want to get that documentation, no reflection on the wonderful people at Joy and Aiken, but that we refer this for action at the next meeting, and we will have the documentation at that time.
Okay. Do we have a motion to continue this?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second.
Okay. I just have a comment. I'm not sure why the change was made from Juilliard to Joy and Aiken, but the first sentence of the contract talked about the increased, or someplace in here, talked about the increased recognition of Joy and Aiken. And again, I don't know the background, and I hope I'm not making an inappropriate comment, but I sure like the idea of Juilliard and Aiken more than I do Joy and Aiken. That's not a reflection on anybody. I had a neighbor move in, and when I told her Juilliard was here, she was excited. So I don't know what the rationale for the change is. But
I agree that Juilliard carries much more name recognition, but I think with the passing of Greg Smith, this was, and I'm not 100% sure on this, but I think it was a request by Stephen Nafee or a wish or whatever you call it, and they were the catalyst originally for Juilliard coming to Aiken. So I think it's sort of a sentimental acknowledgement of Greg Smith. But that's the extent of what I know about it.
Yeah.
Certainly when you look at the efforts that have been made by Sandra and by Greg and Steve, and the fact that they were the impetus for getting Juilliard planted in this community. And I have not talked with Steve personally, but I'm just I'm sharing what a little that I know in terms of their contribution, how Juilliard got started, and certainly this would be a great tribute to.
Well, I just felt compelled to make the comment because of the recognition of Juilliard. And the other comment is we're talking about a 5-year agreement. Does it really need to be that long? I mean, could we do it annually? Could we do it every couple of years? I mean, 5 years is...
One thing that I know about this activity, though, is that it takes an extraordinary amount of planning.
It does.
And I know that they have some big ideas and probably would need more than a one-year approach. But both of those concerns, not concerns, but issues that you raise are absolutely legitimate. If it's okay with the council and through you, Mr. Mayor, I would ask Jessica Campbell, our PRT director, to reach out to the folks at Joy, just for further clarity. Maybe we could get a written document that explains these issues and put it into the agenda.
I'll go on record saying that I hope that we have the luxury of 5 more years of Juilliard coming and more than 5 years. And so I don't have any heartburn with a 5-year commitment to it. But
absolutely.
But
one of the concerns is I feel sure that Juilliard is a registered trademark. Are they going to come into town under the banner of Joy and not have Juilliard advertised anywhere? Because that's a copyrighted name, I would almost be assured of.
Jessica.
Jessica Campbell, PRT director. Sandra will be here at the next meeting to discuss, but from my understanding, it was a request by Juilliard that the name be changed. They will still be able to promote Juilliard individually during their performances, but the name they needed to not utilize Juilliard, since it is so nationally known, they've got some limitations on that, and I'm sure she'll be happy to explain what those are. And then with the 5-year, we were trying to have some similarities with our APA MOU, the Aiken Performing Arts, trying to keep those documentations very similar, since our partnership with them is very similar as it is with Joy.
Okay, so just to be sure I understand, so the Juilliard wrote y'all a letter requesting this?
Not the city, but the Juilliard and Aiken.
Juilliard, that, and then y'all transferred it to
the
Aiken.
Yes, correct. It was
I mean, we can't tell them what to name their organization.
Right.
Okay, I just being sure we didn't get tangled up in a copyright issue by calling it one thing and they come into town and everything else is Juilliard. Because the name is obviously well recognized, where Joy may not be. Okay, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Was this in honor of Greg?
Yes. Okay. You're correct.
Yeah. Okay. We have a motion in the second, unless you had something else, John.
I so move.
Well, the move to continue. Right?
This is the continue.
Got a motion.
I've already made the motion.
Okay.
That's been done.
Yeah. I second.
Second.
Okay. The motion to continue.
Show of hands in. All in favor. Okay. Passes unanimously. The request to spend funds from the Economic Investment Reinvestment Fund, 027, for stormwater improvements on Whiskey Road near Teresa's Restaurant. Mr. Clinton, please.
Mr. Mayor, George Britton is here this evening to give us the latest information available on this project. George?
Yes. You should have, as a handout, some information on the that are basically, let's see, supposed to have a folder here. Don't see it right off the bat. Oh, there it is.
While you're cleaning up, I'm going to think the appropriate thing for me to do is to leave the room on this issue. So y'all will excuse me.
What we have, we're following the same basic project procedure as we followed with Georges Pond and TD Bank. Teresa's, the ex-Teresa's property, which is now being redeveloped for Starbucks,
has had a chronic problem in that area where stormwater has drained from the shopping center back into the Fabian drainage area. It goes across the Philip Mary's property and Reynolds Brothers construction property. And what has been determined is that the amount of water that is being shed from that parking shopping center area exceeds the capacity that the stormwater system can take to move away. If you you may not be able to see the different manholes, but if you count manhole number one being the catch basin into the drain to the middle, almost right in the middle of the property, that's one, two, three, four. Those four manholes and those lines connected to them are the Reynolds property. They're installed, they're private, and actually where you get into, you get onto Millbrook Avenue, that's catch basins five and six. That is where the public property right of way, I guess you could say, the stormwater system connects. So what we find is that we have a situation where stormwater that comes from a shopping center, which is, you know, privately owned, is flowing and flows onto two other properties and then is collected by the city system. The entire system from where you see the drawing and the heavy lines is undersized for what needs to be done. In order to control the stormwater coming from the Starbucks property, they have designed a system that will carry the water from their property to the middle, and then they're going to connect a line that will go to the catch basin, which would be number two on that drawing. What that allows to have happen is the water from that shopping center will be controlled, and they will be able to remove the water. Of course, that will flood their property. We will need to enlarge then the rest of the property to properly contain the stormwater. So what I'm asking for is that we be permitted to go out to bid for this project. Since it is going across private property, we will have to address easements. The Reynolds Brothers have agreed in principle to permit these things if we do certain things for them, which is, you know, make proper parking lot paving reparations. They're requesting that a fence be replaced, and then they will grant the easement. We will need to talk with Mr. Mary to gain an easement across his property. And then there's the subject of cost. Our estimate is we're dividing our estimate up into two different costs. I have a summary here. Division one is the stormwater from basically the back of the manhole number one to, you know, basin number four. So that's what the $101,000 is. Division two is the part that is on the city's right-of-way. And the city's right-of-way is $28,591. That would be a portion that the city would need to enlarge in order to capture this stormwater that's coming from those properties. The cost to Starbucks to pipe the property to the stormwater catch basin is about $4,300, and the fence replacements that's being requested as kind of a condition of easement is $5,000. approximately. So the total project is going to come in at about $139,000, of which clearly $29,000 approximately is right-of-way, and the remainder, really, we're looking for funding sources. In order to be able to decide exactly how much money needs to come from where, we would look at bidding it, and then I'll have firm numbers. But let's assume that these numbers are fairly close. There's about $100,000 or so that's hasn't been identified. We have looked at the share of the water, so to speak, that each, there are four properties that contribute, and the initial discussions have talked with Starbucks as to whether or not they would be willing to contribute to the handling of their downstream water. They originally were planning to put in an extensive underground detention stormwater system, retention system, and that was going to cost them quite a bit of money. So we started talking to them about this, and in concept, they said that that would be something that they would agree to. Now, they haven't heard any numbers, and we just last week got these numbers, so we're just now able to start kind of talking. So conceptually, $50,000, but it might need to be a little bit more, could come from the Economic Development Fund. $45,000 might be the number from Starbucks. $30,000 or so needs to come from our stormwater fund. And then when you add all these numbers up, kind of what remains, you know, we have not addressed anything for the shopping center, and I have not even brought this up yet to Philip Mary to see what contributions, you know, they would have. And we're just now getting that information. The request is to allow us to go up to bid so that we can continue this process, so that we can continue these negotiations, talk about the funding sources at our September 14th meeting. Our plan is to have everything reviewed and completed for putting it on SKIBO next Thursday. We'll have a three-week bid, so we have an opening on September 3rd, I believe is the date. And then that would give us the time to, you know, analyze and come to council on the 14th with a recommendation.
Isn't the building under construction?
I'm sorry?
Is the building under construction?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it sure is.
Yes.
Have they agreed to 40? I think you said 40 or 45,000?
We do not have anything firm yet. They have agreed in concept to dividing, to that as a concept, and we have not given them a ballpark idea of how much it will cost.
I brought it up in here before, and you know this property has been sitting there for almost 4 years now.
Yes.
And the problem has always been, just as you stated very, very correctly, the stormwater was basically wasn't accounted for in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Several owners, and one of them is Starbucks on two occasions, and there's been two others that have come under contract to that, were both asked by the city to spend $150,000. At least that's what the developers told me. And the same one has handled four different contracts on it. About 2 years ago, I specifically talked to Tilden Hillebrand as well as their engineer in Charlotte about this property. I made no agreements with them other than, hey, don't expect you to spend $150,000. When Roger and I discussed it with City Manager Pierce and last with City Manager Ledoux, there's no, you know, as far as I'm concerned, they may chip in a little bit for the fence and some amount that they volunteer, but we need to fix our problem, so to speak, ours being the city. And so we have to be careful. If they come back and say, no, I'm not going to give you any money, I think they have a right to stand on that to say, hey, we didn't agree to that, and we're building our building. So I don't know, Mr. City Attorney, we're building a building and no agreement. I can tell you what Reggie's agreement was, and I've talked to four different people, and they'll probably remember it similar to what I have. I don't think Mr. Grant was party to any of those conversations, so he's over here trying to do his job. So I think as part of this, Mr. Grinton needs to approach all the businesses. But if they say no, then that 40 or 50's got to come somewhere out of the city coffers, whether it be hospitality tax or stormwater or whatever. And we increased the stormwater fee this year. Because that property's been sitting there because of this water problem for 4 years.
George, I'm not sure. I'm assuming that Starbucks had a plan for stormwater when their building permit was approved. Do you know that?
Yes, there was kind of a kind of a multi-cycle issue, because when they first came in, the objective was, and what the city engineer approved, the water was going to be moved to the front of the parking lot and graded towards Whiskey, and that would have been fine because, you know, it took care of the issue. They went to SCDOT. SCDOT denied them the encroachment permit to allow them to do that. So that put us back then into phase two, which was our what are we going to do? And this is when they started looking at it. Well, we're going to have to contain it within our property. And that's when they were, you know, talking this larger issue. So when we had those discussions, I've had a few with the engineer that's working with them, and suggested that this might be something that would be more economical for them, as well as beneficial for the city, and that maybe something could be worked out. So, you know, we knew it was going to be a $100,000 problem. I think they were going to spend probably close to $100,000. So this, in effect, cuts their costs probably by half.
I guess my concern is that this is my opinion, and I'm suggesting that we better be sure that our agreements that were there. And I don't know if the city attorney needs to be helping on this or not, but we've got a building being built based on going to SCDOT, which Mr. LeDoux advised me about, and I said, I don't think you're ever going to get that by, because that water goes to George's Pond, and we already have the issue with George's Pond. It goes down Whiskey underneath by Chick-fil-A and into the pond. And I guess I'm trying to offer help to Mr. Grant, and maybe I shouldn't, but I think we got to be careful with our P's and Q's here.
Sure.
And so we just need to be sure we stick to our agreement. I know what my verbal was, and I have a couple of emails. I did go talk to the Reynolds brothers personally based on a drawing that came from Mr. LeDoux that represents what Mr. Grinton is saying. So all I'm saying is that's a valuable piece of property. It's three stores. Is it only Starbucks, or is Starbucks and a couple others going in there?
I've forgotten. I think it's
Starbucks. Yeah, there's two major chains going in there, and we sure don't want to leave a bad taste in their mouth, which leaves a bad taste in all the others up and down the street. So I guess, Mr. City Attorney and Mr. City Manager, we got to be sure that we give George the right advice here, and we as council help him through it.
I have two questions, Mr. Mayor. Is it urgent for us to move on this tonight? Do we have all the pieces to make the decisions? I don't have a problem using the hospitality tax, the reinvestment funds, because that's what we that's the purpose of it, for reinvestment. But do we need to move on this tonight?
Well, keep in mind, all he's asking for is to go to bid.
That's right.
That's all.
Okay.
The legitimate issue about resources and what the apportionment is going to be is absolutely legitimate, and we do have option B in place. We've identified what if.
Okay. Well, that's my concern, because for the last two or three years, I've been, and you're going to discuss it in a minute, these economic development type people, and I'm not one of them. I know how to push stuff along and build stuff, but I'm not very good at, you know, tinkering with the others. But as long as we got a plan B, the city has approved building that. He is building it. And this has to be done sometime or another. Otherwise, their water is going to dump right like it's been going. So just as long as we don't stub our toe here. But we need to let him go ahead and get this moving.
I agree.
So
what kind of motion do I need to make to be sure we solve the financial plan as well as the contract? There's no question we need to do that.
Move to approve the request?
Move to approve the request?
Yes.
So moved, okay.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Got a second? Show of hands, please, all in favor.
Thank you, George.
Thanks, sir.
Passes unanimously. Item 3, approval to spend CPST 3 money for iPad stables renovations. Mr. Clinton.
Mr. Mayor, voters in November 2010 approved the expenditure of $150,000 for renovations at Hopeland's Gardens, Rye Patch. After consultation with the Friends of Hopeland's and Rye Patch, we issued a request for proposals for Phase 1 restoration and stabilization of the stables. A review team consisting of city staff and members of the Friends reviewed proposals from several vendors. After review and interviews of two respondents, staff and the Friends recommended Midwest Maintenance of Augusta and the vendor to perform the work. The base proposal price of the project will be $178,320. Cost will be apportioned between the city and the Friends of Hopeland's and Rye Patch. The Friends of Hopeland's and Rye Patch met last week and agreed to pay up to $30,000 of the project cost. For council approval is a request to spend CPST 3 money for Rye Patch Staples restoration and renovation. And once again, Mr. Grinton is here to answer any questions that you may have.
Okay. George?
Yes.
Want to get George to speak first?
I'm going to make the motion.
Huh?
I was going to make the motion.
All right, let's make a motion. Let's get it on the table, and then George can speak.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we approve the count of the Capital Project 3 amount not to exceed $150,000. And I said not to exceed $150,000. That's what is in Capital 3.
$149-something left.
I second.
Okay.
There's $150 in the budget.
Okay, any other discussion?
I just have a comment. This is for Phase 1 stabilization.
That's correct.
Does not include the exterior and interior.
There will be some work done for, so like some of the base pieces that will be considered exterior, but it wouldn't be what you would call the extensive, you know, rehabilitation of that. This is to stabilize it, make it safe so that future work can
be done. Yeah, it doesn't finish the project.
It does not finish the project.
The horses in at the end of this.
That's correct.
Okay.
Any other questions?
I just have a question on the phases. Do you know how many phases?
There are 3 phases. And members of the committee, David might be able to say a little better what phase
is. It's in the packet. Phase 2 is interior, phase 3 is... Or exterior and interior.
Yeah. Capital 3 was approved by the voters for $150,000.
Yeah, that's all it is.
Okay.
I'm David Tavernier. I'm president of the Friends of Hopeland and Rye Patch. Phase 2, 60% of Phase 2 is included in Phase 1. So what you're looking at today will stabilize the building, make it usable, and prevent any further deterioration. That's very important. There is no specific time frame to continue with the finishing of Phase 2, a beginning Phase 3, but what will be accomplished here will reverse 50 years or so of water damage and weather damage and deterioration. It's an important part of the Rye Patch, and we feel that it must be preserved, not for us today, but for future generations. We are just temporary custodians here and children who haven't been born yet in Aiken. We need that to be available to them so that they can learn and see what the essence of Aiken is today and where it came from.
Very
well
good.
Said. Well said. So you know how long it will be closed for those repairs and updates?
According to the contractor's schedule, well, it's closed now anyhow and has been closed since the mounted patrol ended. It'll be closed or continue as it is, but the work will go on through sometime January or so, please, as I remember from the contractor's calendar.
So no rentals until late next year?
January 17th.
That would be correct.
It's on the
Right. And I think this opens up an opportunity for PRT to provide something to the significant equestrian community that we have here, whether it be a rallying point for rides into Hitchcock Woods, as you all know, it's very close by, or PRT-sponsored riding lessons, which could take place there. And we would suggest to council that they consider perhaps forming an ad hoc committee, an ad hoc committee that would be involved in creating a focus group, that focus group being made up of members of the community, including the equestrian members of the community, who could, I'm sure, come up with many, many more suggestions as to how that particular component of the property could be used.
Dave, do you mind submitting that as a formal request to council for us to consider?
I'm sorry?
Do you mind submitting that request formally to us for us to
consider? Oh, certainly. Certainly.
I looked at this package, and it's a well-prepared package. And looking at the credentials of the persons, the contractor, the person that will do the work, great experience, legacy of experience at CSUN.
That's right, Councilwoman Price. About a year ago, the Friends engaged Steve Smith, who is a historical architect. He has done these things in the past, in fact, here in Aiken with other equestrian estates. And we engaged him at our expense. He still is with us today. And he had a lot to do, along with our partners in the engineering department, to come up with what you see there before you.
Well done. Well done.
Any questions?
Well, it'll be wonderful to get that fixed.
Yes.
Right.
It certainly will. Incidentally, that is the last major project on the Friends' five-year strategic plan. And it follows after the Roland Wyndham stage, the Carriage Museum, and, of course, the Dollhouse, which was just completed within the last 6 to 8 months.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, David.
Okay, we've got a motion and a second for that.
Yes.
All in favor, speak show of hands. Passes unanimously. Item 4, City Manager discussion to review city-owned property inventory.
Mr. Mayor, I put the next three items on. One was just informational, and the second and the third I will request. I just put them on there as an item of interest, and I will be requesting that they be addressed in a workshop fashion sometime in September or at the very latest October. I've been here 3 months now, and at one point early on in my tenure, I began to search around for a comprehensive list of holdings, and there was some information there and some over here and whatever. And so the long and the short of it is we've compiled a list of properties that we presently own. And I just wanted to inform you and provide that to you, but also say that we're also, in addition, staff is involving itself now in an evaluation of that list. Why was the parcel acquired? What was its original intent? What did we pay for it? Is it fulfilling its core mission today? And there may be areas where we find that we actually have properties that are surplus. And certainly, if we have something that's surplus, we might want to contemplate at least bringing it before you for a decision about getting it back on the tax rolls. But there might be areas as well where we find deficits, where we actually need more land as well. So this is an ongoing project, so I just wanted to bring it to your attention, provide you the information, and ultimately, probably, I would say maybe in October or so, actually have a workshop so we can have a major presentation to show you what we own, and whether we're fulfilling all of the various missions with each parcel, and whether there are deficits that need to be addressed.
Oh, that's excellent.
Very good.
Very good.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm overwhelmed by the size of the listing.
You're not kidding.
We need,
when you have this workshop, if you wouldn't mind, we need to address the 14, we own 9 or 10 houses still, and then we need to address the 4 rental properties.
General, to speak.
On that.
General.
Oh. Yes, sir.
My name is Eric Hurd. I'm a business owner in Aiken. I stay in the city, 315 Grand Floor Circle. And I also look into the properties, and I talked to Mr. Church about Habitat and redoing a lot of stuff in the community. It's some properties that the city of Aiken does own in, like, Governor Acre Park. And we're looking at an area downtown between Union Street, Hampton Avenue, Richland, and Lawrence that the properties are vacant. I worked with Phil Noah and a couple other people with tearing down the dilapidated properties, and I was interested in the properties on the city list, especially in Governor Acre Park, to see if they would come up for sale. So I talked to Emery Langston, mm-hmm. and I wanted to see would the city be willing to sell the properties, because they're just sitting at the moment.
Well, maybe. I certainly, first of all, want to get an opportunity to meet you personally and better understand what you're working on and how we can be helpful. The next step that we're going to make is to categorize all of these, and there's going to be a certain category of land that could be used for things like housing. You're bringing up something that I have a passion for. So the long and the short of it is, if you give us a week or two to continue our work, I'd love to sit down with you, and we'll begin to see a pattern in terms of what seems to make sense and what might be vacant. Ultimately, it's the decision of this council, but I would be delighted to work with you to understand how we might be helpful. And obviously, if we have underproducing land holdings or holdings that aren't meeting their mission, then we need to change that. And certainly housing is an important priority, I know, of this council. So I'd be delighted to work with you on it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
We have it. Ms. Dix, the hand raised.
I was going to discuss this with my councilwoman, but since
you
opened the door.
Yeah, discuss it with all of us.
I'll discuss it with all of you.
Since a lot of this property is in Governor Aiken Park, which is a neighborhood in which I'm the president of the Neighborhood Association, we as association would be interested maybe in obtaining a lot, because we do need to have a neighborhood house. We have a park. And I think with Rogers, sometimes before the crash, there was a house that was out there that we had talked about transforming into a neighborhood community house, and we had presented him with options of the kinds of programs that we would do. So I would also like to be interested in talking with you, Mr. Pierce. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yes, ma'am. Excuse me. Have you sent in a request to the city lately for this property?
No, last one sent was from Rogers.
Why don't you send it in again?
Right.
Please, ma'am.
Thank you.
Okay, number five.
Number five is a request to discuss the issue of an economic development person or business development manager or whatever you want to call it. I did not intend to have this conversation this evening, but wanted to go ahead and draft a job description and at least present to you, maybe in a workshop setting, what we, the entirety of the staff, feel are our needs. And I know that you had some discussion, and this, the funding of this was in the economic reinvestment fund, but it was a skeleton it was bones without any meat, any detail. And so I've been here for 3 months, so I still have a lot to learn, but I have to tell you that I've had this opportunity to talk to many of you about this, that I truly believe that there is a need for a friendly face to the business, for members of the business community. You know, we have a myriad of entities that whose design it is to restrict certain activities, and so they might go to the planning commission and they're told what they can't do, and they might go to our wonderful building staff and they're told what they can't do or whatever. But it can be a very imposing process for someone that can't or doesn't hire a staff of attorneys and engineers to help them in this process. And we don't have one person that the person can contact other than myself. There isn't one person that an interested business person, someone that might want to invest
in downtown or any of the properties in the entirety of the city, there's not one person, and I'd like to change that dynamic, and so I want to be able to talk to you about that. I'm also bothered by the fact that I keep hearing significant concerns about a lack of a real economic development strategy for the north side. We spend a lot of time in other areas of the city, and maybe because it's a lot easier in other areas of the city to encourage people to develop, but it would be nice to have someone that could focus a little time on that issue. I'll be talking a little bit about the downtown and what some of the things I have in mind there as well. And so the bottom line is that I believe that you made a wise decision in identifying this need, and I would like to, rather than in this forum, have a workshop where we can present to you what our thoughts are. You can tell us why you supported this and what your vision was as well, and I'd like to hope that we could do that in September or at the very latest in October. And the other issue is one of office space. As you know, we own three properties downtown, and I know the history of what happened and why we are where we are. But the bottom line is that there's at least one property that we own that very shortly will be totally vacant. We're going to be using it for staging area for one of our projects. But we need to make a decision on that property. And as a manager, I have some pretty strong opinions about the present functionality of the space that we're now using. But I think that a workshop at the right time might be appropriate for that as well. So I was just putting these items on the agenda to suggest to you that there are items that I think warrant attention in the near future, and kind of getting a hope that if I'm way off base on any of these, that you let us know, because we will be spending time preparing these, and so if we don't hear anything to the contrary, we would move ahead and prepare ourselves for a series of workshops.
Thank you. Right on.
I appreciate you turning it up. I think work sessions would be good.
Very good. Did you want to talk about...
I think we do the work session.
Town now?
Yes, the other item is that a request... I've been very familiar with the National Main Streets program. I've seen how it works in a variety of areas across this country, including several that I was intimately involved with. And I know that it's a program that we were involved with in the past. And over a period of time, people change, faces change, and our local business downtown association got out of participating in the program. And I just think I think yet another area for a workshop in the near future is the whole downtown. I've got more than a little bit of experience in downtown revitalization, but some real thoughts about what is lacking and where we need to go. And this is a wonderful tool that's available. We would have to apply, and only two communities a year get accepted.
Right.
But if you get accepted, there is a plethora of technical assistance that's available to the local community. And I know that all of us have a desire to make our wonderful downtown better, and I don't know why we wouldn't. Now, the question is, for some smaller communities, is you have to make a financial commitment. But the amount of money that we already commit at downtown, whether it's to the ADDA or the creation of this new position, far exceeds the minimum requirements for the program. And so I would like to, I've provided you some information, and I would like to have you contemplate us going ahead while we draft an application, and I'd like to bring that forward in September for your final approval. As I said, I think the greatest benefit is that while Aiken is incredibly unique, there are thousands of communities across this country who are addressing all at the same time the issue of downtown revitalization. And I would hate to think that we would foster a strategy that is recreation of the same wheel that has been studied and with laboratories all across this country, that we have a national entity in the National Main Streets Program that knows what works and what doesn't. And so, as I said, I can't think of one reason why we wouldn't
avail ourselves of this expertise.
John, another piece to that, and this is exciting with what you're sharing, another piece to that is that we have a wealth of knowledge in this town, of experienced people who travel the world, who want to share their input with us. And there's not an avenue right now for them to share that. So with your ideas with council, getting our community input, and the input of council, what a great balance that will be in terms of having everyone playing a part in input in this downtown area. It's great.
Absolutely. And I think that, because of your commitment to improving a downtown, the possibility of a new motel, the improvement of the alley, and other decisions hopefully in the near future, I think that and with the rebounding of the economy, I can't think of a better time to recommit ourselves to use all the tools. There are tools that are out there that we're not using. There's the Bailey Bill, which is a historic tax credit program that Beaufort and other South Carolina cities have been very successful using. And we have wonderful examples like the Hayslips that really took a risk and were willing to do something that appeared to be risky. But for the good of the community, they put apartments above their store and we should make others know that we not only support that, but we'll make available to them the tools that are at our disposal, hopefully to convince them to be willing to take a risk as well.
Absolutely.
It says application this year, September 1st, October 15th. Is that feasible? It'll be next year. No. The application is due October 15th.
I guess the other thing, and follow up.
So the answer is your question whether it's feasible to get an application ready?
Yeah.
Yes.
I guess the other thing is, in my short time on the council, we've talked about this a lot, and we've never done anything as a council. And I applaud the roads we're going down and trying to put our arms around all of this, but we sure haven't been very good at execution on this. So I think council's going to have to make that happen, and we haven't. We as a body haven't.
Right.
So I think we all need, if we go down this road, we need to support it.
Absolutely.
We've had businesses moving down on Park Street, and one of them is in the audience here that we weren't able to help, or we didn't help. But yet we were dropping $1 million in the hotel area, which we may still do, some money there, but we aren't helping the little person around town.
And this is why it's so critical with this hospitality tax for us to get that person and to make sure that our voters know that we can account for these funds.
Well, the person we're getting isn't the hospital. That's going to be our development person, but not to deal with the
money. Right.
They won't deal with the money. They'll deal with getting the businesses
right
in town. Council has to deal with the money.
Okay. And as a obvious outsider, I mentioned before that one of the reasons that I was excited about this job is that you have great potential downtown. I mean, in terms of what's lacking, you need more people living here. You have a wonderful cadre of arts organizations that need to be supported and increased, because that's a dynamic and important part of any downtown revitalization effort. I've mentioned that we need to sit down with the presidents of the colleges or whatever, because we have two jewels right outside the downtown area. One a little further, but most communities would die for one institution of higher learning. We have two, but there is a feeling that we could do much more in terms of the connection between the colleges and our downtown area, that the young folks aren't coming down to the extent that they could, and that's a mistake, I think. I think we could work on that.
And let me not pass up the opportunity to once again say that we didn't necessarily need to pass a hospitality tax to find the money for this position. I continue to maintain better management of our money, and I applaud the city manager for making some giant strides in that department. Certainly the listing of the property and hopefully if we act more like a business when disposing of properties that we don't need, we should generate some additional revenue. So, I've got to tell you, if we don't get rid of that hospitality tax, it's going to have a terrible impact on CPSD 4. And I hope you all realize that.
Okay, next.
We will pray for the best for our town.
Hmm?
We'll pray for the best.
I'm not going to touch that comment.
Closing that item.
Mr. Mayor, Katie Phipson wants to speak.
Certainly.
Didn't even see her there.
That's who I was referring to.
I kept looking.
My name is Katie Lipscomb. I live in Cherbourg Place, and I have a business down on Park Avenue. And I just moved from the south side, so I'm kind of all around town. But just wanted to mention a couple things. One, I have a real opinion about the business advocate position. I think we definitely need one, but I think businesses need to have input into what that position entails and what we need that position to entail. And I'm not sure how that input, you know, we talk to one person or another, but we don't get a comprehensive input to what we need from that person. Number two is, it was mentioned by somebody, I don't know who said it, but we have a person that we're hiring to hold our hand through the process, but the process has got to be fixed.
Mm-hmm.
We don't, you know, if there's a compliance officer or whatever, or the ordinances that are telling us no, that we can't do something, then how do we change it? So I just want to make sure those ideas get put in the business advocate thing. And the other thing is with the downtown stuff, we got to remember our Southside independent businesses. I'm moving from over there, and we just can't concentrate everything on downtown because it, I know we're not, but I just, it's just what people feel sometimes, and we need to make sure that we make sure that the independent businesses in County of Hill, on the south side, on the north side, and everybody feel like they're all part of what makes Aiken special, too.
Absolutely.
So,
Thank you, Katie.
Great points. I will mention that one of the suggestions that have been made for that staff person who will be the economic investment officer or whatever we call them, is that they also help illuminate to council those flaws within the system that Katie was referring to, that we've got to fix the system. And I think there hasn't been a person that is that closely connected with the end user but also has the ability to communicate directly with council. So that's, you know, that's one of the objectives, I think, for that person, is to ultimately to help find the hurdles within the system and bring in the council's attention and even make suggestions on how to improve it. So that's part that's anticipated, that person will do some of that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I have really, the last few months that John has been here, called him quite a bit. And if I wasn't calling John, I was calling Stuart. And these are real concerns that our citizens had. And it eased their mind when John would get up and go out to that site. And they were some very, very serious concerns. Or Stuart. And you look at their time, and we pay them for a job, but they're being pulled away. I'm one council person, so if all of us are calling on them for problems, their time is pulled away considerably from their office or doing their normal duties. So this person, I think, will help tremendously in filling that void that's needed in that office. So. Mm-hmm.
Okay, Unfreeze, is that the one you want?
Mr. Mayor, we have a request from three departments. One is public safety, and our chief is here this evening. There's a maintenance mechanic vacancy. As all of you know, very sadly, we lost an employee recently. who was a godsend to all of us and to the department. He is sorely missed. But our work and our challenges continue, and the chief would like to be able to fill that position. The building inspector's division lost an employee who relocated to be with family out of state. The employee is needed to inspect buildings and structures to ensure compliance with building codes and parks, records, and tourism PRT, a secretary vacancy. The employee position is at the Week Center. The position is crucial for assisting customers, walk-ins, and by phone, assisting with rentals, registrations, and a variety of paperwork. And so for council consideration are the filling of these three budgeted positions.
Okay, sir. So we have a motion and a second.
Move approval, Mr. Mayor.
I second.
Okay.
I just have one comment. Sure. The building inspection comment, it's just hourly pay is depending on qualifications. Maybe we could do a range so we get an idea of what that is. Okay. Just technical point. Thank you.
Do you want to discuss that now?
No, that's fine. That's all I wanted to say.
Okay. All right. Anything else? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Okay. Number 9. Request for city attorney to identify developers of houses in Jim Lakes extension.
Mr. Mayor, we have had a request from a council member to provide documentation about the developers in this neighborhood. I think we have provided the information, the list of the developers in question. And Stuart, who assembled the list, can answer any questions that you might have.
If you do have questions. Oh, Gary has it. Okay.
I passed out to all the city council members a map of the Jim Lakes Extension neighborhood. That map has been color-coded by Mike Jordan in the building inspections department. For the color that is purple, you see that row of properties at the bottom of the map. Those properties were developed by Keystone Homes, and the yellow dots were developed by Meredith Homes. The builder for those homes was Brian Wesley. The brownish-colored homes were built by Faircloth Homes, and again, the builder was Brian Wesley. And then you see the one property, this green, kind of in the middle of the page, that permit was applied for by Gall and Kish. That's the one house that they actually built in that neighborhood. Mr. Edner had a question earlier as to why a different name would show up on the certificate of occupancy than actually shows up on the building permit application. I'm not sure I'm the best person in the world to explain this, but apparently the city software program that they use to issue the certificate of occupancy is based on the tax records. The tax records are only updated once a year, and that's December 31st at the end of the year, every year. If Gall and Kisner owned a lot of land in January and sold that lot of land to somebody else in February, and a certificate of occupancy was issued in June, it's still going to show Gall and Kisner as the owners of that property because it's based on the tax records. The deed records are going to be different because the deeds are recorded at the time of closing. And when someone comes in to apply for that building permit, they've got to show the deed that shows that they own the real estate. But the software doesn't update based on the showing of that deed. The software simply relies on what the tax records say at the end of the year. So in that scenario, Gall and Kisner would end up as being the owners of record when the certificate of occupancy is issued. If you go and look at the records the records that Mike Jordan keeps as building permits, you will see that the owner of the property is listed as who is the title owner or the deed owner of that property at the time that the building permit is applied for.
So even if these guys, if Meredith Holmes built it, the property deeds could still be listed in Kistner and Gala.
You get that backwards. The deed would be listed in the name of Meredith Holmes. The tax records are going to continue to show that, that Gall and Kistner own the property until the end of the year.
Because there was a number, I looked at a number of these that Mr. Decker provided, right. Mr. Williams out here provided.
Right.
What happens if somebody's on the lot for 2 or 3 years, like people buy a lot ahead of time, then it gets built on? Is it issued in that person's name then? The CO would be issued in a person's name.
Yes, been through the December 31st tax. Yeah.
All of these properties have been developed by a, all these properties were owned by a builder. And so the builder owned the lot and made the transaction with the eventual homeowner that bought the lot, or bought the house.
Another real case, if people own a lot for 2 or 3 years and they're paying the taxes, then when they went to issue the CO then would go, the people that own the land, which would be the homeowner, like Gary Smith owned a lot for 3 years,
right.
When they issued the CO, they'd have Gary Smith's name on there, not Builder XYZ.
I think that's probably correct, but I would want to check with somebody to be sure that's correct.
Okay. So in other words, then these homeowners out here can use this, because obviously we, you know, I think it's well known, we have some quality issues with the houses.
Yes, sir.
And so we actually use the permit, the name on the permit, to do this. So basically, Kistner and Gall have nothing to do with it.
They've got one, they built one house in the subdivision.
All right, but the rest of these, nothing.
There were three owners, I agree, there were three owners of lots. Faircloth Homes owned all of the lots that were either not developed by Gall and Kistner LLC or Keystone Homes. Faircloth Homes owned the rest of the lots. At some point, Faircloth, Meredith Homes and Faircloth Homes are owned by the same people.
Yeah. I think it's called LLC swaps.
Right. It is. Something like that, yes.
Yeah, all right.
Yes, sir.
In fact, the developer for most of those homes was Fairfield Homes, not Meredith. Meredith was only the builder on the permits. The seller was Faircloth.
Right.
That's who developed them. I have here Faircloth's licensing document from the Secretary of State. He was not entitled to do business in 2011 in this state. I question how it is that a business that's not eligible to do business in the state of South Carolina is then given a business license by the city and proceeds to sell homes. State law, section 3315.101, authority to transact business required. A foreign corporation may not transact business in this state until it obtains a certificate of authority from the Secretary of State. Let's see. This certificate of authority was issued in 5-9 of 2012. My agreement to purchase a home from him was in 2011. He's listed in the city as being eligible to do business in 2011. I'd like somebody to explain to me how it is that the city issues business licenses to businesses that are not eligible to do business in the state of South Carolina.
I'd be happy to look into that for you. That's the first time I heard of that, Richard.
If I copy that.
Yeah,
I got a couple of them to add.
Well, do you have enough for everybody?
Well, probably. If I go back to there.
You can give one to Gary and well, as long as Gary and the mayor and John have them, do you have enough for those three?
I got it.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
If you've got enough to go around, I'm sure everybody would like one.
Thank you, sir.
Be sure the city clerk has one so it's in the minutes, please. So she can have mine. I'm sure I've already got a copy. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Lot 5, who do y'all have as the listed builder?
Give us your name.
Oh, Sean Derrick.
They aren't numbered that same way.
Thank you, sir.
Lot 5.
I got one. Thank you.
You need another copy?
My chart shows that, Lot 5 was developed by Fair Cloth Homes.
This is the house that John Fisher built. That's where you come down and around, tie back in, so.
There it is. That's 4, so that's 5, that's brown.
Which is Fair Cloth.
Okay. All right. Okay. Lot 5, y'all have listed as Fair Cloth? I don't know how that came to be. I found out from when my application was done that it was actually Meredith Homes that did my original application, even though I signed a contract with Fair Cloth Homes. I want y'all to know that I was really shocked to find out I had a different builder than what I did, and that has caused me numerous problems in trying to get some stuff that was improperly installed and was incorrectly installed on my house. Meredith Homes has accepted responsibility for that and is working currently to get that fixed. But nevertheless, doing business, thinking that you're buying from one corporation that has a name on the beginning of the neighborhood that doesn't even have a license to do business in this state, I think that really, really needs to be looked at how that came to be. For years, that came to be.
Terry, did you get his name? Can you state your name? Just make sure.
Sean Derrick.
Okay.
Sean, when was your home built?
My home, we signed a contract on it in March 2012, and it was completed in August of 2012. He got his license to do business after the permit to build the house was done, a month after. So technically, like I said, having spoken to Meredith Homes and Brian Wesley and their super, which is Scott, they've taken responsibility for the incorrect installations on stuff that were done into my house. But I just want to come up and say that, I really wish that City Council would have paid more attention to who they were giving licenses to and if they were legally allowed to do business and if they're operating using somebody else's license in an inappropriate fashion, which I think is completely was.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
Is that the only one that we think is illegal, so to speak?
Well, any house that was built by Faircloth,
yeah,
and sold by Faircloth prior to May of 2012 would have been using Meredith Homes' license, and they did not do anything on any paperwork I have as a DBA. It was all Faircloth. Every bit of paperwork I have is Faircloth. The check was cut to Faircloth. Everything is Faircloth. And Faircloth legally could not do business with me when I signed and gave them a deposit on my house.
Yeah, there are many issues with Faircloth building in the city. When I contacted the city licensing people, Mr. Campbell, and I asked him, would he kindly let me know who the prime contractor and all subcontractors to who built my home were? His response was that the following contractors, the general, the mechanical, the plumbing, and the electrical, pulled it, but we are unable to identify any other subcontractors that did work at that address because they did not have to pull permits for their type of work, and we do not require businesses to give us all the addresses in the city that they did work at upon obtaining a business license. Well, that's odd, because the municipal code in this city states that no contractor shall be issued a license until all state and municipal qualification examinations and trade license requirements have been met. Subcontractors shall be licensed on the same basis as general or prime contractors.
And finally, each contractor shall file with the license official a list of subcontractors furnishing labor or materials for each project. It's quite clear that the city licensing people failed to do the requirements. And as a matter of fact, there is on the city website a form. It starts here, goes there, lists every contractor, asphalt, wallpaper, flooring, metalsmith, waterproofing, anything you can imagine in the house, and requests the names to be filled out by the contractor. Where are these forms? When are they being told that the city doesn't know who these people are? So, in essence, what happened in the city of Aiken was unlicensed, unregistered subcontractors were in this city building, putting up siding. He wasn't licensed with LLR. I mean, we get to a situation where the city can say, well, it's not our job to do that. And that's what we're being told. It's not our job to check the license. It's not our job to check with the Secretary of State on any of this. The solicitor wrote to me and said that licensing isn't required to check to see if they're registered with the Secretary of State. So in essence, any business could come in here. I could come into the city licensing office tomorrow and say, hey, I'm Rich Corporation. I'm out of Atlanta. I want a license. Okay, here you go. No check to make sure I'm entitled to do business in the state of South Carolina whatsoever. And the same with these subcontractors. Nobody checked. The building inspection people say, well, that's not our job to check. We don't do that. Contractors can come in and they can hire whoever they want, and we don't have any notice that they've hired anybody. I beg to differ. Any city agency could make a list. It's very simple. Building inspector could certainly have made a list and said, Mr. Contractor, I want your name, I want your license, I want all the subcontractors working for you, and within 48 hours, if there's any change to that list, I want a notification of that. Because right now we have, in Gem Lakes, in addition to the roads, we have estimates for repairs of the siding that run $20,000 to $30,000 per home because they weren't inspected properly by the city. We have roofing. It is falling off. After 4 years, the edges of the roof is breaking off because they allowed the shingles to be extended too far off the edge, and they're sagging down and cracking and falling off the buildings. $300,000 homes, and people are losing their shirts because of this. Jim, who was here before, his estimate to repair the AC, it was improperly installed and inspected by the city, $12,000 to $18,000. Ductwork is incorrect. Plenums are incorrect. Everything is incorrect. There have been massive failures within the city to protect the people. Now, I'm sorry. The city attorney can quote legalities, and I'm sure you will. That's your job. But there's also a moral and ethical responsibility of the city to protect the citizens and their investments. You failed. City Council has failed. You have this going on. You have unlicensed roofing contractors, unlicensed siding contractors. They come up to Aiken and the building inspection person says to me, well, we just don't know who they would be. How would we know? How would you know? You ask for a list, and you ensure that those people are registered with the state. You don't let them come up here and do what they did, go off to Georgia, and now homeowners are left with holding the hook, holding the bag on this. It's disgusting.
That's all I can tell you.
So what's our remedial action? Well, we can sue the contractors. They're corporations. They got a $15,000 bond with LLC, this Brian Wesley. That's the extent of his bonding, is $15,000. You think it's going to go far when you got $20,000 to $30,000 a home times 20 homes? That's $600,000. People are out of money. Am I angry?
Yes.
I'm very angry. I think it's been a complete failure. I can take them to court. Well, Mr. Mayor, you're in business. That's what you have a corporation for. You have limited liability with your corporation. You don't put $600,000 in the bank account so somebody can attach to it. Or I can take Brian Wesley up before LOR, file charges against him. You know what the fine is? $500. $500 for this kind of damage to your citizens of Aiken. I'd like to know how it ever got this way. But there you go.
Well, me and my wife moved here from Louisiana. She's a physician with University Hospital. We came here so she could be a physician in Aiken. We thought it was a good community, good underserved community, so on and so forth. We had our house built. We weren't here, so we built it. We came, looked at the lot, and that was the last we got to see of it while she was finishing her residency at LSU. And long story short, the house got put a little bit behind schedule, so we had one day that they could get the certificate of occupancy for my house done in order for the bank to be able to close the loan. To make sure that that was correct, Heath Moore and Milner Faircloth, the Milner Faircloth being the realtor for Maybaum Realtors and Heath Moore being the super for Faircloth Homes, were at my house all day to wait on the city inspector. And nothing happened. I gave the bank a call about 2 o'clock in the afternoon because the city inspector was supposed to be at my house before lunch, and they had a certificate of occupancy. And all I can tell you is I paid $3,600 and some change for somebody to come out and inspect my house, and nobody showed up. Now I've got crushed pipe coming out of the house that the air conditioner's crushed. It's got to be replaced. I've got crushed ductwork. I had a ductwork that hadn't even been hooked up for 3 years. Blew cold air into an attic, and now I've got mold going up and down a wall. I've got water damage up and down a ceiling and a wall. And this is all stuff that I paid for to the city to get done, to make sure that it was right before we moved here. And just understand, that's part of my frustration. So, you know, I'm not blaming anybody specifically. It's not anybody's fault here specifically. That's just how it happened. So, thank you for your time.
Okay, one more, and then we got to kind of close up.
None of this is on the agenda.
None of this is on the agenda.
I'll explain to you what this is.
This is all illegal.
This conversation.
When you put a gas-fired furnace in a house, you use a double-walled pipe.
Right.
Okay? There was no double-walled pipe. This was surrounding the gas pipe. City building inspectors came out and inspected that house and approved this. Okay? This wood's charred. We could have lost our lives because of that.
You don't want to keep it?
What do I want to keep it for?
So, make another speech.
Okay.
No double wall pipe, not enough space between the piping and the sheathing. That's what you get.
The only comment that I'll make is the next time that we impugn the integrity of city staff, we should at least give them the courtesy of knowing the last 10 minutes was a very intriguing conversation that's absolutely illegal because it wasn't on the agenda. And we didn't have our inspection staff here present, as they should be held accountable, but we did give them an opportunity. I hope that doesn't happen again.
I did ask to be on the agenda.
Then the item says, request of the city attorney to identify developers of houses in Gem Lakes.
Okay. Developers are also includes who works for them. I take it as a company, not.
Okay.
I think you're right, John.
Rich Ann.
Thank you.